Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to Robots and Red Tape. As always, I'm your host, Nick Schutt. Happy to have Aaron St. Clair and Jonathan Rendon here with me today. Guys, how are you?
Hey, doing
Doing
great.
good. Awesome. So glad to hear it. So if you don't mind, for folks that don't know who you are, can you just tell us, Aaron, why don't you start, and then Jonathan, tell us a little bit about yourself, your background, and kind of how you got here and what you guys do now.
Sure. Well, thanks for having me. My name is Aaron St. Clair. I'm the corporate product director at Omni Consulting. And so really, I've been a defense contractor for about 20 years. Did that after serving in the Air Force, mostly finance acquisition, so procurement background. And yeah, I'm just happy to be here. Jonathan, let me know about the opportunity. And I'll tell a quick story about my background that kind of gives a little bit of context of how I really got here. Because as I said, I was finance and procurement for many, many years, just sitting with the government, helping them acquire mostly ma major acquisition systems, satellites, and that type of thing. And when I got the opportunity to work for Omni, I actually worked got the opportunity to work for a guy named Casey, who years before we went to school together at the academy. And after working for him for a year on contract, this was I want to say 2019. And Casey and I asked him if he could meet me for coffee, actually. And we went down to Manhattan Beach and sat down for a cup of coffee. And I said, "Hey, man, I've been through my contract execution, just supposed to be a consultant. I'm building tools through this Microsoft environment and that type of thing. And that's what my passion is. That's what I really want to do. I want to build tools. I want to get, Omni into the software fields and out of just professional services." And the reason I was passionate about that, and this was again about 2019, was because I felt at one day in the future, in the near future, there was going to be someone who decided we couldn't afford to employ all these people, and we were going to have to automate processes. And I told Casey that, and he said, "I never forget." He says, "So you just want me to throw you in a building by yourself, and you're in there drawing up code?" And I'm like, "I'm not a coder. I'm not that of a technical person. It's like I'm here for the processes, and how can I automate? I've been working for the government, supporting the government for many years, understanding how they do business. How do we get those in ones and zeros and make things easier and be able to do more with less?" So when that opportunity came about, and I'm sure we'll talk about it more when we purchased a software company, to get us in that business, I was selected to lead that effort and been working in that. And so when you and Jonathan were talking about the discussion today, I was the one to go to, and I'm again honored to sit down and just share some ideas with you guys.
And thank you. I appreciate the story and the additional context for folks. And it's always interesting. It's always a winding path, kind of how you get where you are. But like being able to take all of that procurement knowledge and then take it to the contractor side to build a tool out to help government do procurement better is, I mean, that's a fantastic mission. So thank you. And Jonathan, what about you, man? How'd you get here?
I took the bus. No, I'm just
Yeah,
So, I'm originally from Los Angeles, California, and I started out in healthcare, working with LA County, and I have actually been through many different parts of healthcare. My taglines is I've done everything except touch a patient. So I've been in HR, I've been in finance, I've been in, doing agreements, clinical workflow analysis, standing up the ambulatory care network. I had a small part, but it was very interesting, very cool work out in LA County. And then I've been in DC, in the DC area for about 10 years now, or 10 plus years. And I've been doing a lot of work with the Defense Health Agency and the VA, trying to make things more effective,
more efficient, producing, impact and results while trying to do more with the team that we have, and in some cases, trying to bring things and solutions that we can, how do I say this the right way? Essentially, increasing the impact with a smaller footprint, and that's been my kind of career the past 10 years here, doing some consulting, and I like it. I'm naturally a tinker, so I always know that in my mind, I always know there's a better way to do things, and I try to find it, and then I try and get everyone else on board, and so that's you heard Aaron mention it. So I do have a lot of ideas, and I try to share them as much as I can.
Fantastic,
But
man.
and I'll just tell you a little bit about Omni. Aaron will go more into the specifics that we're here to talk about today. But Omni Consulting Solutions, really grew up with space programs and doing a lot of acquisition management, financial management, systems engineering for the Air Force, now Air Force Space Force, and we also have a pretty big presence in the federal side of government as well, which we can talk more about as the conversation progresses.
Absolutely. No, that's it's very, very interesting, very diverse backgrounds, right? Obviously, Long Beach and LA are like right next to each other, kind of part of the same general region. Very cool coming from the acquisition and military background, and the other from the healthcare background. I also am in the healthcare space in addition to the government space and a couple other spaces. So, no, that's fantastic. And so obviously you guys have been doing Omni for a while now, then with Aaron, with your desire, how did you guys get into the product space, and what is Vision X? What is it, and what problems does it solve?
Yeah, good question. So we back in 2022, we acquired a company. I mean, that was our best way of getting in, because we do, all federal contracts. You have to be able to do that. Hey, what have you done? All right, what's your past performance in order to qualify to do it again? And we had at the time built no software, so we bought a software company, and the software company had two DoD contracts, one which was kind of expiring, and the other one which we just recently did a contract follow-on. So we're a sole source follow-on, and we're really excited about executing for them for the next few years. But what the work was and the system was a truly antiquated system. Jonathan, I know you saw it before we purchased it as well, and before we did the enhancements, but it was a system from the 90s. Lots of blocks, lots of orange and yellow tables, and nothing optimized. And I think it was really genius of the guys, of the partners, to identify this opportunity. Because they had essentially the acquisition would pay for it with the existing contracts, if we continue to run those through the period performance. And then there was just so much upside on the system. And what the system does, which Vision X does, is this automated procurement system, and it's really tailored towards high volume proposals. So for solicitations like a BAA or a CSO, where you're just going to get hundreds, if not thousands, of proposals, it automates that procurement system or that procurement process, specifically the evaluation sprint. So when proposals come in, then it manages the source selection team, does automated rubric scoring, algorithmic scoring for the cut line, rack and stack, automated contract notifications with with automated debrief language. So each step of their contracting timeline, which is very, very aggressive, what VisionX does is automates, the processes that they're going through to make assignments, to make evaluations, to capture their information for their contracting log. And the way it was built was just in it was inefficiently built. I mean, it worked. It covered the contract requirements, but we just knew, one, when we made it look, I mean, user experience is super important, and so that UI updates were kind of the first thing we dove into. And then from building out the UI, it quickly came to our attention that it wasn't just the way it looked, but it was the way it operated. So not only the performance, responsiveness, but also just the workflows. How can we make these workflows better? And my experience was sitting with the government and understanding how they need to measure twice and cut once, and they need a report for everything, and they need to have data behind driven decisions and those type of things. We really started leaning into optimizing workflows in the system. And as we've done that, we've just delighted the customer. I mean, we're doing things in 45 minutes that used to take 48 hours. Lots of success stories, and not only just kind of hosting this portal for them to manage their procurements, but also really building in efficiencies in each of those workflows to get their job done quicker and with less people.
It's amazing. That's amazing. I mean, anytime you're taking something from 2 days to 45 minutes, that's, I mean, that's increased efficiency, right? And so,
And can I just jump in real quick?
please.
And so, I heard about a lot of that work that Aaron and team were doing, and particularly the taking the processes down from, days to minutes, and that being what I like, I was like, we need to get this in front of folks. I was like, we need to take it from where it is and try and share this with as many people as we can. And I think, given what's going on today in our industry and GovCon, it's become even more important to make sure that we can share these capabilities and tools and the AI agents Aaron's going to talk about later. To take all of these things that would take days, weeks, I guess if you multiply it across agencies and governments and bring it down, reduce it by like factors of 10 and stuff like that.
Absolutely. So right now, just so I understand, so right now is it's not doing like full, is it doing full evaluations and everything? So if and again, like whether it's like a BAA or task order responses on an IDIQ or what have you, or is it like sitting and reading all of them and doing like an initial ranking and sending it off to people? Or is it like just doing part of the process, like a compliance check, or how does it work now, and where does it want to go?
Yeah, so the system has a but what we like to feel is a best in class rubric. It's very configurable, so that rubric, the program manager can set up the factors, the sub factors, the rating criteria, scoring, and those rating descriptions in order to guide evaluators to their best evaluation of technical proposals. In the program, to you submit a technical proposal, it's not about past performance, it's about technology maturation and moving it up the food chain. So what we've done is we've taken that rubric, which is essentially, hey, here's the factor of criteria that we're looking at, technical merit factor. Here's a sub factor, which is in the form of a question, actually. And that question says, hey, how unique is this technology, for example? And what we found real quickly was The evaluators go into the technical proposal and they'll read it and they'll pull that and garner that from this technical proposal in order to assign it a rating description, either at excellent or poor or somewhere in between. Well, there's a integration that we've created with a large language model that can do that, we think just as effectively and efficiently as human beings. And this is, one of the things that I'm finding with these AI evaluations, anything that you're doing that's important, right? Like, hey, the rubber meets the road, right? We're gonna award contracts based on these evaluation outcomes, obviously. So, with the Rubrik AI evaluations, we always have what's called explainable AI. The system will go through and it will read each of those subfactor helpful questions, read through NLP, read the tech volume, and answer those questions and suggest to the evaluator. So the same level of folks are needed theoretically, right? You still need evaluators for each of the proposals, but they're assigned to oversee that AI-based evaluation. And so the recommendations come through based on the NLP reading the technical volume and the rubric and making those recommendations that can always be overridden. And their citations, so if something's getting excellent for a particular subfactor, it was not only unique, but it had dual use capability or what have you. Then there will be a citation on that recommendation that you can then click on. The evaluator can click on. It'll bring them to that part of the proposal where the AI is reading that and pulling that and making that assertion. So that's one of the capabilities that the system has right now, and we're super excited about. Right now the evaluation assignments are kind of going on the same, but we think we can get more throughput, less evaluators, and at least less time spent per evaluation. And we're always building that into quantifiable factors that we can evaluate and see how we can speed that up and increase the accuracy.
It's amazing. That's really cool. So the people that are so the users of this are internal government evaluators, whether those are COs or cores or program people who are evaluating proposal responses, correct?
That's correct.
Okay. Go ahead, Jonathan.
I was going to say that's currently who's using it, and this could be at pretty much any agency, but the applications are there for private industry as well, folks who do large purchasing, in the science community who may have like a problem that needs solved, and it's like, hey, how can I do X? Here's a blanket. We're gonna do a competition, and then whoever wins, will get funding. This Vision X approach works for that as well.
That's really cool. Yeah, so there's not just government. You can also go to industry. Somebody that's reviewing a lot of proposals, right? This is not designed for somebody that's going to look at 2 a year or 3 a year. It's if you're doing volume, you need something like this.
Well, so just to put a fine point on that, so the initiation of Vision X and the programs and the contracts that we got into, the program that we're currently in production with and operating every day, that what you just said is an accurate statement, built for high volume type proposals. However, I like to call it Vision X Plus. So we're not on contract just yet, but we've taken a lot of time to invest internal R&D money in order to build out additional capabilities in the system in order to tackle some of those more traditional procurements as well. So just as we're doing like a rubric for the program we're on to automate the scoring and evaluate technical proposals, we've also have a one of our agents, so we like to build these out separate app slot It can and can doesn't, but doesn't need to interact with the core Vision X code, but it can help manage the workflow. But essentially, it's just we've identified like 16 different touch points of procurement, government procurement that can be automated. And so we've invested lots of dollars for that more traditional route because it's kind of the program we're in. It's a little more unique. We want to be able to introduce this technology to some of the more traditional, you know, still, I mean, not the low price, or I'm sorry, the low volume as like major weapon system. You know, I am buying one big acquisition satellite component for $1 trillion, but those professional service contracts, those folks that are doing you know, procurement over at the VA, at the FBI, at different agencies that are doing more traditional procurements. So now we have the capability, for example, hey, you've released a RFI, for example, in order to see what's out there before you start your acquisition planning. You receive some responses, and the first thing that they do is they check the compliance, right? Okay, did we give you a draft RFP? Your response to that, they answer the mail, right? Or have you addressed each of these draft RFP paragraphs? And so we have a capability of essentially getting those RFI responses. You upload it against your PWS. And the system will do an automated compliance check. So under a minute, you're going to understand if every PWS requirement was addressed in that system. They do the same. We do the same thing for RFPs and actual proposals as well. So the really trying to, again, don't have a contract opportunity or a contract execution that we're exploiting these capabilities on just yet. But we've put a lot of R&D dollars into building these out so we can get them configured and get them in front of the wider procurement community.
Absolutely. And just out of curiosity, Aaron, I know you've probably sat on the government side of this before. How long would a compliance check take, just one, if you're reviewing them manually?
You're going to do a good one. Or
Yeah.
if you're, yeah, or if you're gonna just press the button, yeah. If you're gonna do a good one, I mean, it could be hours, a good afternoon, you know.
One.
I get back from lunch, yeah. I get back from lunch and I'm because you're mapping. I mean, right? These are very, and that's the great thing about this technology. It's just if you understand the functionality. I mean, it's just, hey, I've got a database input here. I've got a database input here. Now I just need to map this one to this one through some semantic similarity. Then setting up the AI to do that and to cut down on that. I mean, again, it's another 4 hour type task that gets done in minutes.
Yeah, and for any response, you're going to get any RFP, you're going to get more than one response, right? So,
Yeah.
you're saying that right now, government gets 10 proposals. It's going to take one person a full week, so 40 hours, to review, just to do a compliance check on all of them, and you guys are doing it in a minute. Like, I mean, that's revolutionary,
I like to think so.
right? You
I
might be
mean,
biased, but that's okay.
yeah. That's a lot
I
of
think
time
it's
saved. Yeah, that's a lot of time saved to focus
absolutely.
on more effective things.
Absolutely. And I mean, and that's just the first step. But like, as I think about federal procurement at large, like, I mean, like big scale, right? Big, 10,000 foot view. One of the bigger issues that I've seen, and I know you guys have seen it, is either pre-award or post-award protests that are holding everything up, right? And like, on the vehicle side, we can talk about like CIO SP4 that's been in protest now for over a year. We can talk about T4NG2 that's been in protest for over a year. And I think last I heard, like T4NG2, the court kicked it back because the evaluation criteria were wrong to, were biased to begin with, I think. I don't remember the exact terminology. And then on CISB4, most recently I read that CISB3 had just like it was extended for a year. So the existing vehicle was supposed to end in 2023. It was extended through 2020 through like March or April of 24. And then it was just extended again through, or sorry, it was extended through 20 through this March or April of 25, and then it was just extended again out through 2026, right? So these are vehicles that the government uses to put out huge amounts of work, and then folks
Don't
like
forget
the
NASA
VA.
soup.
I'm sorry,
Don't forget NASA soup.
man, I didn't even want to get into that. You want what how long has that one been pending, Jonathan? I don't even remember.
Don't know the exact amount of time, but it's been a long time.
Right, and these are the big ones, right? These are the big ones that catch headlines. But like I can tell you, like I remember specifically in 2016, one of the first pieces of work I got with Artemis, I was helping somebody bid on a piece of work supporting LA Job Corps, actually. So I was like, you know, it was career placement specialists. So these are people that would work with the folks in Job Corps, right? And they would help them. You know, these people came through the Job Corps program, come through the training program, and then these folks would help like prepare them for careers and prepare them for jobs, and then help place them into positions, like entry level roles in different parts of the community within LA. And I remember that was it was pre-award protested, then there was a post-award protest. And I still had a relationship with the client at the time. And it didn't like that protest period didn't get wrapped up until like 2019, 2020, right? And now the incumbent, like their goal was to go from, well, it was to, you know, the work had to continue. Their goal was to just turn essentially extend their contract because it was in you know, it was in protest, and so the existing work continues. So they got extensions, they got extension after extension, and turned a 5-year contract into essentially a 9-year contract. Is this something like, is that an area you think that like this tool could help with, from let's say attacking some of the either, you know, some of the protest or trying to cut down on some of the protest difficulties out there? Because it's not a human making a decision, it's a software making a recommendation. Or do you think that's like a larger problem?
Yeah, that's a tough one. I mean, everything that we do has human oversight, so there's not the definite that they're that hey, someone could put in a protest and say, hey, this was done by a robot and not by a human. So that's not a huge risk or concern for us. But how to actually, I think what you're asking is, how do you cut down on the inaccuracies that some humans can make in the contracting process in order to kind of mitigate some of those risks by having inaccurate information or something to go awry during that process. And that's a tough one to crack. I mean, we try to make sure that, hey, the capabilities that we build in, it's not that they're disconnected. It's not, let's not say that. But we try to build them so they have a level of independence where the continuity of that information does not leave legacy information on new documents. And I'm trying to think of a, so let's just, let's say, for example, I have our system generate a sow. Or PWS, right? So the way you do that is you feed it two approved PWSs. It looks at what's consistent, what's variable, creates a web form that you can then fill out and creates a automated PWS. Boom. Okay, then I use that PWS when I put out an RFI that I created automated the same way, by the way. And I use that and I put out the RFI. And then the document compliance check, when I get those, receive those RFI responses, and we run the document compliance check. Well, each of those steps, so for those three steps, I'm really, it's not just moving it along in the workflow where you can have legacy FAR clauses or cedrils that are on there that can kind of muck up things. What you do is you take one document and you move it to the next workflow. And all that variable information is then caught in metadata that you can have oversight in changing. So it does take out some of that legacy stuff, but as we build these, because we like to build them as AI agents, kind of independent, you know, hey, I need this done. I don't want to have to make sure that I go in and all the longitudinal data is aligned and I'm checking X equals X over here. No, I'm just taking my document and I'm uploading it and I'm getting the job done. So we think that does minimize some of the risk on having some of that those legacy clauses, those legacy criteria that's not aligned with the right type of solicitation and those type of things. But to be honest with you, I'm just kind of babbling to answer your question. Like, we haven't solved that problem. JL,
I have some
you
thoughts
gotta,
though, and
yeah, you got some thoughts for
Aaron's
sure.
gonna elbow me here when if I say something that goes into the technical side. But I think another way to look at your question is because I think what you were asking for what or asking about also was the time savings. So you know, protests happen for lots of different reasons. Nothing that would be directly the result of or affected by the Vision X tool, the process, or anything like that. But with some of the explainable AI features that are included, the compliance checking, the citations, it's my personal belief, Aaron's gonna tell me if I'm right or wrong, that in the event of a protest, it could potentially be quicker to get to resolution because of a lot of times what takes a while to protest is collecting the data, collecting the information. Why this company? Why not all of these? You know, and those arguments take a while to put together. But if we have all of the proposals that were received, and we have some of these citations that go along with it, it could potentially be a quicker process to get to some kind of resolution, you know, no matter what that resolution is. And that's kind of my thought. Aaron, what do you think about that?
Yeah, I appreciate the so many ideas are going through my mind. I wanted because w my real question is, when can I get you on the dispute resolution sprint? So we have it. Those 16 capabilities that we talked about, there are different levels of what we'll call MVP, right? Again, they're not in production. They work, but we are constantly going through and iterating. So one of those 16 capabilities in the procurement system that we talked about is dispute resolution. It's been one that's been challenging for me, but we need to get you into that sprint, Jonathan, because
Let's do
you
it.
know it sounds like it's a lot about the document compliance, right? I mean, it's kind of doing the same thing, right? And it but then it's generating. Sorry to just like start brainstorming our
No,
product
let's roll,
on
man.
your show
I'm
here,
here
Nick.
for it. I'm here for it, man. Let's roll.
We're gonna fix this today.
Yes, we are. We're going to
Robots
solve all
red
the world's problems.
Yeah. So we've been just running it kind of like a, you know, enhanced document compliance where it would, sorry, I'm tearing up here. I think I've had a breakthrough. Sorry, I tear up easy. But as opposed to getting from that just enhanced document compliance for the dispute resolution stuff, I see what you're saying. Taking those compliance checks and then creating a actionable report or display or something that then cuts down on the time of the research that is done for those disputes is the real magic, is what I hear you're saying, Jonathan. It's not just the compliance check. We'll talk on
Yeah,
that.
I'm sure we can cut because I'm sure we can cut it down from those for that LA jobs opportunity we're talking about, that 9 years or 4 years in protest. I'm sure we could cut that down
Yeah, I mean, well, I mean,
considerably.
I think that was by design specifically. They wanted it to take longer, right? And then you're going to delay if that's your legal tactic. There are some people that are really good at delaying as a legal tactic. I can think of some cases that I know about, but yeah, but
I'm
like
seeing more incumbents,
mm-hmm.
put in disputes, and make that, just like you said, four-year contract into a 9-year.
Yeah, I mean, like from the incumbent's perspective, if you're going to lose the work, it makes sense, right? But it does slow everything down.
Yeah, if you're the customer, you want who you picked,
Or if
and
you're the company that won, right? Which is
yeah.
just like, now all of a sudden my, 35 person contract over, 5 years is all held up because, and now you have like any like I mean I like I can like specifically I know of a incredibly impactful program right now. It's at the VA dealing with some serious like with some of like trying to address some of the underlying causes associated with some serious some serious mental health disorders for veterans specifically that impacts veterans' lives, right? Like this work can save people's lives. And it's last I heard it's been in protest for a year. And it's not, this was a new program. All work has stopped. And a very, very, very large consulting firm, one of the big ones, is holding everything up because some of the work that they did on the some of the work that they did previously OCI'd them, right? So the organizational conflict of interest, they were it was decided that they couldn't go after it, and then they sued after award. And a friend of mine has had, expensive people on payroll now for a year, and he hasn't like they have for they haven't been billing for him, right? Which like that like as a business owner, like that's expensive. I mean, like, but it's also like it's not even about that, and it's not about his company at this point. It's costing lives because this work is not being done, right? And I think that like we can all talk and like listen, a lot of the stuff that happens in the federal government in the government space is not, I'm not going to say not mission critical. Some of it is, a lot of it is, some of it isn't, in my opinion. And that's program by program and agency by agency. And I think that a lot of like, we can get into a political discussion about what should and shouldn't be done, but at the end of the day, when this is research and these like this is research that's happening, these are people like this is work that if done properly can save lives and save men and women's lives who went and wrote a blank check to the US government for up to and including their life for service. And now like you want to protest like who has the next help desk contract wherever, that's one thing, right? But if like it's just a whole different, it's like a the tragedy is orders of magnitude greater in my opinion.
Yeah, that's unfortunate. I truly think there should be a something like a credit score when it comes to the protests. And if you're putting in for frivolous protests, that should hamper you for at least the follow-on of that contract, if not wider implications. I mean, that it's a business strategy at this point for some folks. And that's, when it comes to mission critical stuff like the example you just gave, Nick, it's inexcusable.
Heartbreaking. It's heartbreaking, right? Like, and that's what, and like what I, what I do love about what you guys are doing though, is that you're looking to streamline the federal contracting process. 'Cause, we all know the folks who are in it and have done it that, and like there's just inc like incredible amounts of inefficiencies. And I think a lot of it, when you look at it from, like a CO or core side, I think that, first, one of the major problems that they have is just lack of communication from like internally from the program folks and the contracting officer, right? And that's part of it. There's an like I think another big problem is when you start looking at moving through the phases from like a source of sought to an RFI to an RFQ to an RFP, a lot of that information first is in like the final product, right? So the what we see that's released on SAM or wherever, it's like the same thing, right? So you're, a source of sought is going to be shorter than an RFI. It's going to be shorter than an RFQ. It's going to be shorter than an RFP. But like a lot of the pieces that are in there are going to get moved from spot to spot. And those systems don't talk to each other largely. And so you have to copy paste from one to the other, to the other, to the other, and move. And it's a very manual process. And I think that If you, on the generation side, that's a huge opportunity for streamlining. And then also I think that like the compliance piece, massive. If you're able to cut down on man hours spent from, 4 hours per one for a good compliance check to 1 hour, because that's a pass fail, right? If you don't pass the compliance check, your bid's not
You're
getting it.
out, yeah.
Right, you're out. It doesn't matter if you have the deepest relationship with the client ever and you have the perfect solution, you're out. You're out then. But being able to help with some of those lower level, I'm not going to say lower level, but some of the time consuming administrative tasks associated with procurement and speed all that up, like that's amazing. That's efficiency in and of itself, right?
Yeah, and like Aaron was saying, the humans, the evaluators, they're the ones who are making the decisions. Let the AI do the grunt work. There's a lot of time. If a person is doing it, it's going to take me a certain amount of time to read through 25, 30, 50 pages, depending on the solicitation and the proposal. But the AI can do it, a lot faster. And the AI doesn't need to sleep or drink coffee or, you have lunch. So it can go through thousands of them very quickly.
How was you guys' experience working with this customer you've mentioned that you're in production? How has your work hand in hand with them influenced the development of Vision X?
That's a long story, to be honest with you. So, I mean, it's a SaaS contract, right? So we make the final design decisions, as long as we're meeting the requirements of the contract, the capabilities of the system is meeting the requirements of the contract. Because they are our anchor tenant, we take a lot of feedback. And so, it's the typical agile development. We're getting feedback, we're feeding it through the loop, we're doing the development, getting more feedback, et cetera. Here's the thing about the government. They want everything for free, right? And then they really have this level of money or the resources where they can experiment a little bit. They sometimes have less than formal requirements, we'll say. And so that requirement creep really influences a lot of our development. I'll give a practical example right now. So right now in production, we have a system that takes a evaluator's skill set, so their education, their work history, their expertise. It builds a skill inventory for them, and then through an NLP, we'll read the technical evaluations, and then, or I'm sorry, not evaluations, technical write up for the proposals. So the NLP will read that, and then through a cosine similarity score, essentially take a match and give a cosine similarity score for every evaluator for every proposal that comes in for a solicitation. With that matching, they wanted to say, well, hey, and then there's an algorithm to make the assignments based on the population of the evaluators. So the customer wanted to say, hey, for each topic, we don't want to overload somebody. If they're just a great match for all these proposals, we don't want them to get 100 assignments and someone get just one. So can you set a threshold of how many assignments, at this topic level, the people are able to come in at this solicitation and are able to get matched up to evaluate? This is, again, high volume. We're getting 1,700 proposals, 6 week evaluation sprint. 800 evaluators across the world that volunteer have all different backgrounds to evaluate this stuff. So we set the threshold, and now they're saying, well, hey, the threshold for this solicitation, you being able to set that, and then it stops making the AI recommended evaluation assignments. Well, now we want it not just for the solicitation, but for all solicitations, because we're realizing our population of evaluators, yes, they're doing the solicitation, but they're also doing another solicitation. We're assigning, way past their threshold. So if they say they could do five evaluations, yes, we've had to build it per topic, but now we needed to look across solicitations and be able to say any active solicitation, now what's their threshold and redo the algorithm. So there's a lot of, design input and just, that's what we're here for, right? I mean, that's what that in my mind, that is the SaaS model where you have, I mean, we have a major workflow on how to match the most qualified evaluators with the most technical proposals. And then they're always going to say, hey, we've been using it this way. It might work a little better, and so we take that feedback and feed it in, and that's most of our spend, to be honest with you, when it comes to executing the contract. We still have amazing R&D spends outside of what we're actually delivering, but most of our spend on the contract execution is, tweaking those workflows to just make them more efficient, make them match exactly how the government operates. So we're constantly getting that feedback.
Yeah, no, I love it. I mean, continuous development is absolutely something that's super important, and continuous improvement, right? And as you look at, but it, the requirements creep is absolutely a thing. You will like we always need to like monitor, especially dealing with any, I mean, any client, right? So, any other like real successes that you kind of want to talk about, or anything that you think people listening to this would want to know.
I mean, I think everything that we do in this system, in this automated procurement system, is really to do more with less. And I think we're getting lots of successes on that. Another one was automated debriefing language. So as most solicitations you got to give, if you're not selected, if you're not awarded the contract, you get to get some debriefing language to understand, why. And it's got to be substantive enough to lead you to do something better, to have a better outcome next time, right? So what we found was our contracting officers were going into the evaluator comments. And then they were pulling those out of the evaluator comments, making them, compliant for public dissemination, and editing those, and then getting them back to the contractors that weren't selected for contract award. And when you're talking about doing 10,000 proposals, awards up to 1.2 billion a year overall, for the entire program, the contracting officers were writing debriefing, letters for more than, they were doing their actual contracting procurement, their contracting life cycle. And so we very simply, first iteration, said, hey, based on your rubric scoring, then what we did was we said, based on those evaluator ratings, then we would automate debrief language. And so now the contracting officers don't have to touch those and go back and make those edits. And I mean, it's saving hundreds and hundreds of manpower hours every year. Something they want to continue to iterate on, because now, as opposed to having kind of canned language that's mapped back to those rating scores, they want to have generative AI language. That's gives it a little, even a little more customization to that debrief language, so it could be a little more actionable. But when we've run into that, because it's, anytime you're sending something official, you want to test out all the edge cases and make sure that it's gonna give what's expected. Last thing we want to do is muck that one up. And so one of our first forays into that generative AI language is actually for the evaluator comments. So if evaluators are making comments and notes in the system, then they can hit a button and it prompts a large language model we have in the environment to essentially take those different evaluator notes and then turn them into a source selection compliant evaluator comment. The positives, the negatives, et cetera. So we're really happy about that. That is in production, and that's been also saving heck of time, for people writing those up. So, I mean, what we're trying to do is say, where do people spend their time in this procurement process, and what is a replicable process that happens all the time that can be exploited through a large language model, and how can we build the best prompts and integration and workflow on the back end functions to bring that to life. And it's been fun, man. I'm just here for the workflows. I'm just here for the workflows. I'm not a technical guy. I'm here to say this is how the government would do it, and work with my dev team to make it all come to fruition and just understand what they're doing, which has been super exciting for me. Not knowing the ones and zeros, but getting closer and closer to it every day is just it's been great, man. And then just seeing the like it, you asked for wins and getting the we're doing a demo, and you're getting like exploding thumbs up emojis coming through. Like there's something about that I've really enjoyed.
Powerful, powerful tools, saving lots of time. Aaron's here for the workflows. I'm here to take what he's done and try and share it with everybody else. Aaron, just for like completeness, do you think you could just hit on some of the specs? I don't know, FedRAMP. We have ISO processes, those kinds of things, just so the folks out there can hear it from us.
I mean, we're just to say OPSEC compliant. I mean, we're the systems is hosted on a FedRAMP compliant environment. It's everything that if from the large language models, it's actually APIs within the in a closed network, which is really cool. So we're not like training any of the third party services that we do this AI processing through. They're not training their models or sharing information. So our system's IL level 4 or 5. Right now we hold CUI, and super secure. I mean, we one thing that we, and again, out of my bailiwick, but what I really stress on my developers and found ways to do my program management verification is we build for security. So active authority to operate with our DoD organization. But we're in the plans that they're building when they're showing me a architecture for one of our agents, one of our hey, this is going to sit on a different app slot. And the very first thing that we wanted to confirm was, is this training a model with this type of information? And the answer is always no. It's always a close, contained, highly secure model, and all FedRAMP compliant, and we feel good about we feel good about the security and of the program for sure.
Absolutely. No, that's fantastic. And I was gonna ask, how do you bring in it? I was gonna ask about how you bring an LLM into this environment without sending any of the classified information back to whichever LLM you're using, their servers, right? If that's either too technical or gets too in the weeds or is too proprietary, totally fine. But like I'm just kind of curious, how does that work? Are you essentially dropping all the proposals on like everything on in as a rag, so it's coming through that way, and then filtering through all of it? Like, I mean, how does it actually work?
The number one thing you have to do is develop and host your software in the correct environment, right? Is it Azure Government High? Is it AWS? Secure? Is it, whatever, whichever one of those FedRAMP approved products, environments where you can host your development and your software, then the more streamlined that, as long as you're containing everything in that network and that environment, then you're going to be good to go. Now, there's that just means there's a lot of things that you can't do because you would have to touch some external library or feed some model. But when it comes to the AI, the models, right? The interaction with the models, which I think you're asking about, it's an independent model that's living in that same environment that you're getting all your integration with your application. And that's
So,
really the only way to do it if you're going to do anything that's CUI or confidential.
absolutely. No, I appreciate it. As we get ready to wrap up, gentlemen, is there anything else, any other points, either you would like to make, anything else that anything I should have asked that I didn't? All
I
right.
don't know from the technical side, but from my side, we're looking to bring this technology to you, right? Wherever you are in the federal space or the private sector or commercial side, let us know. It's customizable along the procurement space. Aaron talked about the 16 points anywhere there. And if there are things that we haven't thought about, we can work on including those as well.
Awesome. Well, I really appreciate it. And Aaron, Aaron, Jonathan, really appreciate you guys taking the time to come on and chat today. Everybody, thank you for listening. Thanks for listening to Robots and Red Tape. Hope you're having a great day.